Good morning, everyone. We're going to start. We don't quite have a quorum yet, but we're going to start the presentations. And once we have a quorum, I will let you know that. So this morning, we're going to start with Senate File 886, Senator Herr.
State lands.
Welcome, Senator Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee member.
And again, we will move the Senate file once we have a quorum, okay? So if you could start your presentation, that would be wonderful.
Sure. And I just also want to let you know that I have Ms. Kathy Lewis from the DNR here with me to also answer any questions that are too specific. The Senate File 886 is an omnibus land bill. It is a combination of 15 bills with 11 senators. The primary purpose of the bill is to authorize the sale of or exchange of certain tax forfeited lands. The lands are located in 11 counties in the state. The bill also authorizes the DNR to sell or exchange parcels which are located in Crow Wing, Lakota, Fillmore, Lacon Parr, and Steve counties. The bill contains boundaries changes for four state park and one state forest. Finally, the bill provides a technical change to the landowner's bill of rights and provides that proceeds from the sale of DNR acquired lands may also be used to pay for expense incurred by the DNR in selling or exchange state-owned lands administered by the DNR. This bill doesn't have any long-term significant fiscal impact. However, the DNR parcel in Crow Wing County, Section 12 of the bill, will be offered for sale in fiscal year 2014 with an estimated value of $12,000. The other three DNR sale parcel covered in the bills will be conveyed to a local unit of government for costs with minimal payment for the land. And there's about 26 sections. Do you want me to go over each one or any questions you have for now?
As of right now, Senator Ingebrigtsen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if the senator can answer this, but maybe Ms. Lewis can. Section 8, is this special legislation here that's something we've not done before here in the legislature, or is it something that we do quite consistently with a tribal boundary land?
Senator Herr, or is this something you'd like Ms. Lewis to testify?
I'd like Ms. Lewis to answer this one for me.
And Ms. Lewis, if you identify yourself for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kathy Lewis, Lands and Minerals, DNR. The Section 8 of the bill comes from Senator Lowry. It's a separate bill, and this is for Carlton County in its process for selling tax forfeited lands to the Fond du Lac Band. This is a proposal that was actually enacted several years ago, but at the time it was subject to approval by the Carlton County, and they did not approve it at that time. They are ready to do so coming through this time with some changes for exceptions for a few parcels. It is not, to your question, Senator Ingebrigtsen, it is not one that you see too frequently. So it is a bit unusual, but it is supported by the county.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So follow up with that. So it has had some work history behind it. Does it? Does this passing of this this statute now refer to all the reservations in Minnesota, or will they have to come individually for each parcel to do this very, very type of thing if they're going to do some
Ms. Lewis?
Sales.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this bill is specific to the Fond du Lac Reservation area in Carlton County, so it would not apply to other tribes or other reservation lands in the state of Minnesota. They'd have to come in and ask for separate legislation in those cases.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
just a general question for the chairman or staff. The bill that we have in front of us, I notice, at least I can't find a fiscal note that has been attached. I note in Section 2, it talks about adds to spending and payment of expenses. Section 3 talks about adding some land, so I'm assuming there's some expense there. Section 5 talks about adding some land. So my just a general question is, why is this bill here? I am assuming it's because there is a fiscal impact, and if so, is there an explanation as to why we don't have a fiscal note?
Thank you for the question. I was just inquiring about the same thing. So Mr. Naiman is going to talk about the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, I think on a bill of this type, the fiscal costs are generally borne out of the actual sale of the lands. You'll note that the bill is returned or it comes to the full committee out of the division, so it has to be processed through the Finance Committee in order to make it to the floor. But there was not a fiscal note requested. I don't think that one was necessary on this particular bill. And if Mr. Knopf wants to amplify anything that I've said, he's...
Mr. Chairman,
to that point.
Senator Newman.
I can understand that where land is being sold, that it would be, money coming into us. But clearly there are some aspects here that where we are spending money and... I don't see anything in the packet that tells us how much money we're spending. So, we really are kind of devoid of information. So
maybe I'll let Mr. Knopf speak to that. Mr. Knopf?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Greg Knopf, Senate Council Research and Fiscal Analysis. We have land sale bills pretty much every year. A couple of years, we've even had two of them. Through these bills, these are speculative sales. We're not sure if they're going to sell or not. You'll notice that we're authorizing special sales. DNR and counties do sales all the time, but for specific reasons, if it's a private sale or a public sale on shoreline, we need to have special legislation for those sales. So that part, Mr. Naumann spoke, the proceeds come out of the sales. And then the additions to state parks, and those things, again, we're just expanding the boundary. We're not necessarily spending money and acquiring those tracts. This just allows the state to do that if the state has the money to do it. The main reason, many years we don't send this bill to the Finance Committee. And Mr. Mueller didn't ask for a fiscal note because there really isn't any new spending in here. It's really just speculative whether or not those sales go forward, and generally we will receive money for that. The main reason we sent the bill to the Finance Committee this year is Section 2, because there's a statutory appropriation from the land acquisition account, and the purposes for which the appropriation can be spent were being changed, and the thought was that it probably should make a trip to the Finance Committee just to make sure with the change. Since this is a statutory appropriation, it does deal with appropriating money, it probably should be sent to the Finance Committee this year. So the bill was sent to the Finance Committee largely over Section 2.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that explanation. I do understand that when we authorize the sale of tax-forfeited land that it is going to be speculative because we don't know if we have a buyer or not, and I do understand that. Nevertheless, it seems to me that the state is spending money within this bill. If for no other reason there's been an admission in terms of Section 2 that we're spending money, and that there is an appropriation, and I don't know why we would want to send this bill to the Finance Committee if you're not going to provide the Finance Committee with any information regarding what we're spending. And that would be my criticism. Don't ask us to just rubber stamp it and send it on. I want to know what you're spending. That is important to me. So that would be my criticism of what I'm looking at this point.
And maybe this will help. Mr. Knopf, can you articulate for us where the proceeds from Section 2 go?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, Section 2, this will not change anything that the proceeds. The land acquisition account is a recipient of money from sales of state land. And the money goes, and then there's a statutory appropriation to spend it on outdoor recreation area or outdoor recreation tracks. If you look at 2.14 to 2.15, Chapter 86A is our outdoor recreation. It's state parks, trails, recreation areas, forests. And the DNR manages this account, as I understand it, by whoever sells the land. Basically, they spend it on the types of lands that, that are being sold. So when we're selling land, we the money can be used to replace similar lands. Now, all we're doing in here is the new clauses 2 and 3 basically say that that they can spend it on getting the land to be saleable or in exchanging state-owned property so that, that it, it expands what they can use them. But there'll be no new money into this account. All the money comes in from land sales, and it just allows them a couple of additional items for expenditure out of that account.
Mr. Knapp, one follow-up question. What about the proceeds from the other sales in the other section?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the tax forfeited land sales, now the state holds title to them, but they're managed by the county. The state holds title and trust to the tax for the taxing districts. And when those lands are sold, the money flows through. There's a set formula in the tax forfeited statutes on how the money. And actually, some counties have their own special laws, but those that money flows through to the school districts, to the town, to the county from those sales. So because they're the ones who lost the tax revenue when they went tax forfeited, so it goes back to the taxing districts for which the revenue otherwise would have gone.
Thank you. Senator Peterson, I know that you were waiting to ask a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Knopf, is it an accurate statement to say that right now all these properties are not paying property tax and that after the sale they will be?
Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, not all. There are going to be some of the state lands and some of the tax forfeit lands will be sold to other local units of government or conveyed to local units of government. There's a few of them. Most of it's going back to private interests. When they're sold, then they will be paying property taxes. But you'll find a few sections in here that will become parks or things like that that are going to be held outright by the local unit of government. So there'll be a few sections like that, but generally your statement's correct in that for most of these properties, they'll become private property after this.
Mr. Peterson, Senator Peterson, pardon me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Herr, it looks like there's 29 different sales here. Have you or your office received any opposition on any of these sales at all? Or?
Oh, is that a question for Senator Herr or Mr. Knapp?
Well, Mr. Chair, either one. I was just curious if any of the elected officials that are involved with this bill, and that right now it's Senator Herr, if their office has received any opposition to any of these sales that are listed here, or if everybody's in agreement.
Everybody is in agreement. Yep.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, we can't move the bill yet because we're still waiting for that wonderful quorum. So with that, just give me a moment. For now, Senator Herr. Senator Herr?
Yes.
Because we're waiting for a quorum, I'm going to put Senate File 886 to the side, and we'll get presentations on the other bills. And once we get a quorum, I will expeditiously call you back up and adopt a committee report and go from there. Mr. Knapp.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, you have a division report, too, right, for this that you'll have to
yes.
adopt? Yes. Okay, I just want to make sure, because we have an additional land sale that went in.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Knapp. Thank you, Senator Herr, for your patience and understanding.
Thank you.
With that, we will go to Senator Scalzi for Senate File 1245.
Wait, is it the House file? Do we have a House file? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate File 1245 is a melding of a couple of agency bills. This bill contains changes related to the change from Office of Enterprise Technology to MINIT, the new IT name. And the bill also contains some agency changes proposed by Minnesota Management and Budget. The OET to MINIT changes will be described by Michelle Weber, and the MMB changes will be described by John Pollard and Eric Naumann. So with that, I think we'll go to, if it pleases the chair, go to an amendment that Eric Naumann has prepared, and he would be able to explain that amendment.
This is the A6.
The one thing that I was thinking, give me a minute.
Sure.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to know if there is a fiscal note for Senate File 1245. I didn't see one in my packets here of materials. Are there anything that we should be concerned of financially, or why is the bill before us?
It is my understanding there is no fiscal note. We pulled this particular bill back from the floor, and so we do not have a fiscal note for this Senate. But Mr. Naumann can help address any fiscal issues that this bill presents.
So, Mr. Chair,
Mr. Naumann.
And Senator, it is the jurisdiction of the Finance Committee to examine questions of fiscal policy, of which this bill has several. excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat this morning. So the bill was heard by the Policy Committee and was sent directly to the floor. This happened both in the House and the Senate. The Ways and Means Committee in the House and the Finance Committee in the Senate both recaptured the bill, brought them to the Finance Committee, and put them before you for the purposes of discussing the fiscal policy matters that are contained within. But there is no fiscal impact directly to your point.
Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Is there a brief from Senate counsel on the bill itself?
There's no summary.
There's no summary. It's my understanding. Senator Naumann, and then I have something that I want to say. Senator Naumann?
Oh, wait. You've answered my question. Thank you.
In light of the fact that we don't have a quorum, and I'm not terribly sure as to when that quorum is going to arrive, I think that it's probably best for us to adjourn and then reconvene.
Okay.
We will adjourn, not recess. But that's my feeling because we're not sure when or if we are going to get a quorum. Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair, could we possibly present my bill and lay it aside? It's very quick. One of my testifiers has to hop on an airplane.
Okay. I believe I can accomplish that.
All right.
But someone called me. Senator Saxoff.
Mr. Chair, maybe we can ask counsel about this, but the actual name change from OET to Minute, I think this came up in the state government finance bill, too. Is everything that was in this, the state finance bill, is it included in this bill, too? Is anybody happy to know? Because if it's just the first part, then.
Counsel? Question is whether everything that appears in this bill is it consistent with what's in the State Department's bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxog, it should be identical.
Should I say that? So, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson.
Senator Saxog?
What seems familiar to you is because you and I already. Over.
That's why I wanted to make sure that the summaries were the same.
Yeah. Senator Anderson, so it seems familiar to us because we're all in State Department, so let me say that for the record. Okay? So with that, what I will do is, Senator Scalzi, you can, make the call as to whether you want to keep going through your bill just so that we're familiar with it and we, lay it over, or if you prefer to wait until the others are here and then go through the bill. So I will let you make that call before I go to Senator Dibble and allow his bill to be presented so that his testifier can get on the plane.
Mr. Chair, whatever your preference would be with consult with Mr. Naumann, whatever works best for the committee would be amenable.
Senator Sackshaw.
Mr. Chair, so Senator Anderson, is your inquiry been answered with what Mr. Bodron said?
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sackshaw, I was just looking to make sure that the summary that we had from state and local government matched up with the summary that we have here, because things change from committee to committee, and all of a sudden we find out that there are things in a bill that we thought we were still looking at the same, and all of a sudden we don't get a summary to say, okay, maybe a repealer or something else just minute has been changed. And I was kind of looking, wondering why we didn't have the summary along with the bill. So.
Okay. Senator Bono.
Mr. Chair, I don't sit on state government, and because I have been so involved in the IT consolidation and Minute, I'm very interested in the bill. And so whether we hear it in detail right now or when – oh, perhaps we have a quorum – or when there's a quorum, I would hope that we wouldn't just say that because – most of you have heard it, that we would just kind of quickly go through it.
No, Senator Bonoff, my intentions were definitely wasn't to say now, since we've heard it, that there's no need for the rest of us to hear it.
Okay.
I'm trying to be as sympathetic to the testifiers and not have them go through the process without having a quorum and for us not being able to take any action on the bill. So I wanted to be mindful of that, because guess what? There would be other senators like yourself who are not on state departments, and I want them to have the benefit of hearing this wonderful presentation that is before us this morning. So, Senator Sackshaw.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the bill, the state government finance bill, has been through this committee and it's been to the floor. I mean, the opportunity to hear these same things have been everybody's had a couple chances here.
And Senator Sackshaw, it is my understanding that there's also an amendment that is going to be made to this particular bill.
That makes a difference, Mr.
Yeah.
Chair.
So that's why I'm just a tad bit concerned about that. So here's what I think is the best course of action. Let's lay this bill over, even though there's no action can be taken because we don't have a quorum. And then when we come back tomorrow, let's assume that it's going to be the first thing on the agenda tomorrow. Is that okay with you, Senator Scalzi, or would you like to go forward?
Well, I have my testifiers here, so you know, if you want to hear about it today, that's fine. It's up to you. You know your committee better than I do.
Well, then, since you made it very clear that you have your testifiers here today, let's proceed forward and let's hear it, and then we can go to Senator Dibble, and then if we do not have a quorum at that particular time, then we will adjourn.
Thank you. Thank you,
Senator
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scalzi.
And what we have before us is the A6 amendment, and I also have Michelle Weber here who can speak to both issues in the bill. But Eric Nauman would be able to explain to you the A6 amendment.
All right, the A6 amendment, we're going to have that distributed.
So, Mr. Chair and members, as I mentioned, in the other body as well as in the Senate, this bill was brought forth back to the Finance Committee. At that time, the Chief Fiscal Analyst in the House and myself had a conversation with management and budget to clarify a number of provisions that were in the bill, and this amendment reflects the state of those conversations. I will delay speaking directly to the amendment until I'm sure everyone has it in front of them. So, Mr. Chair and members, it looks like we're about there.
Yes.
Lines 1.2 through 1.2 clarifies the method of delivering the minutes of an LAC meeting rather than simply striking the requirement. Under the language of the original bill, the requirement was struck, and it was MMD's intention to post the minutes online, and we suggested that it be best to say that if that's the case. And that takes you up through lines 1.4 and 1.5 as well. 1.6, we talked with MMB, and we were concerned that the when language under the – this relates to the federal funds expenditures under – Section 3.3005, a number of sections apply here. The language that was in the original bill didn't allow expenditures in certain circumstances beyond the end of a certain of the actual fiscal year. So the language has been adjusted to allow it to continue through the end of the biennium. Section 3 begins on line 1.6, also clarifies the occasions when the dollars that are approved under that statute can be expended through the end of the biennium. This applies through subdivisions 3, 3A, 3B, or 6, and also clarifies on line 1.23 and 1.24 that if the federal funds are approved under an urgency, that only the time frame in which the urgency is requested is when the dollars can be approved for. Section 4 begins on line 1.25. Again, in that same statute, there have been certain occasions when federal funds grants are sent to the legislature where we get more information, other occasions where we have less information, most notably in the most recent budget. So this subdivision adds into the permanent statute specific language on what information should be provided to the legislature so that it can evaluate federal grants when they come forth. So here we're talking about, and this is kind of fiscal weed stuff, the federal grant, the agency from which the funds are available, a federal ID number, a brief description of the purpose of the grants, the amounts expected by fiscal year, et cetera. It's all within that subdivision. In most occasions, this conforms to what MMB is already providing to the legislature, but we wanted to be sure to specify it so it's listed here.
Any questions on the A6 amendment as far as its impact on the bill? We know we cannot adopt the amendment, but I want to make sure that we have had an opportunity to answer all of your questions about the A6 amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see anything on here that would require MMB to put page numbers on their information that they send to the legislature.
Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, if you're referring to the governor's budget recommendation, I think that would be a different section of law. Maybe you're speaking more tongue-in-cheek, but this section relies more towards the submission of federal funds.
Okay.
Any other questions on the A6 amendment?
Mr. Chair, on the second page, there's a few other additions I'd like to highlight, or in most cases, subtractions. The original bill repealed Subdivision 2, and again, this is a question of information that MMB would like to provide. Here we're talking about the compilation of local impact notes. And again, the agency in the original bill spoke to deleting this section, and their intent was to post it online. So Mr. Marks and myself suggested to the agency they may want to actually say that instead of repealing the section or the subdivision. So that's done as well. Line 2.7 is a change. Again, the date, and this relates to the what gets shown in the accounting system, the new budget system. Because the new budget system moves to a baseline of beginning in fiscal 2012, the date was stricken, and it previously said 2010. Our suggestion was, rather than removing the date entirely, that we move it to 2012 to reflect actually what's happening. Line 2.9 is a reporting requirement on the Department of Management and Budget related to federal funds withheld under the No Child Left Behind Act, essentially a reporting that if a waiver is not granted, the Department of Management and Budget should report to the legislature the amount of potential dollars that would be withheld. And because this provision was enacted through the K-12 committees, we felt it would be more appropriate for it to be considered under a repeal if a repeal is necessary, through the K-12 finance divisions. So it's being stricken from this bill under the recommendation of the amendment. And similar logic was applied to lines 2.10 through and 2.11. These are prohibitions on the Commissioner of Finance or Management and Budget from including in the governor's budgets expenditures from the Trunk Highway Fund for non-highway purposes. Again, this was And then there's some subsequent amendments to that are covered on line 2.10. Because that language was created through the transportation committees, it was felt that it would probably be appropriate to be considered through the transportation committees and should be stricken from this bill. So, Mr. Chair, that's the contents of the amendment, largely technical changes that we thought that staff felt reflected the legislative prerogative to review overall finance policy.
Well, let me say, I'm happy that we have a quorum. So we do have a quorum. And before I get to you, Senator Dibble, can I just do some housekeeping to get us up to the place where we need to be? Will someone move Senate File 1245 so that it would be recommended to pass and move to the floor?
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those.
Mr. Chair.
What don't you have to adopt the bill before you can adopt the amendment?
So you can take on the motion. Senate typically. Just about ready to do it.
Picking on the chairman.
You can say that put the
motion. There's an amendment.
All right, thank you. So it is my understanding that it is the actions of the Senate not to move the bill to be adopted and placed on the floor without just moving the bill first. So we are moving, bringing before Senate File 1245. And I would like to have someone move to adopt the amendment, which is the A6 amendment. Senator Dibble moves adoption of the A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
I have some questions on the amendment before we pass it.
Senator Engelbrightson, yes.
Thank you, if I could. I'm sorry. A couple of questions, Mr. Nauman. With regards to the second page, you said the fiscal staff to determine with local impact notes and keys. Is that a huge change, or maybe the senator can answer this? Is that a big change in policy there? And you mentioned something also about transportation committee policies here that we're dealing with. Are there any dollars? I have to ask the same question Senator Newman has asked. There's some dollar figures here. Why are we discussing this? Is there any fiscal impact? And I think the implication is no, but on page 16 of the bill, I see an $84 million figure in the line, and I'm just wanting to make sure that if this came back off the floor for a reason, that reason is that we're supposed to be discussing finances here, but we're okay with this. I know the other committee did hear it, but we did not. And
Mr. Chair and Senator Engelbrightson, good and appropriate questions. And I did breeze through the amendment fairly quickly. It might be worth maybe circling back and highlighting some of the points that you brought out. I'll emphasize at the front end, the reason we are looking at this is not because there are costs in the bill, but more because there's fiscal policy in the bill. So it is the Finance Committee's jurisdiction to examine overall fiscal policy. There are a number of amendments in the or number of changes to the base bill in the amendment that are intended to clarify what the agency intended. For example, the one that you highlighted on the local impact notes, you'll notice that on line 2.8, we're getting rid of a repealer in the base bill, and that repealer begins on line 1.3 through 2.6. So we're bringing that section of law back in and clarifying that the intent is not to repeal the requirement entirely, but instead to specify that with respect to local impact notes, the agency shall publish the requirements in this statute. A compilation of local impact notes shall be placed on the agency website. Our fiscal staff's concern was that we didn't want to lose that requirement in its entirety in the agency's endeavor to streamline their process. They spoke very clearly to us, and I'll let Ms. Weber speak to this if you have an interest. Their intent was not to repeal the requirement either. It was to specify they wanted to publish it on the web, and Mr. Marks and myself felt, well, if that's the intent, then we should say that in the statute.
Senator Engelbrightson, any other follow-up?
Yeah, just thank you, Mr. Chair. And the transportation, I guess maybe you
sure.
address that.
That's a good point.
There's no fiscal implications
either.
That's fine.
No, Mr. Chair and Senator Engelbrightson, this applies to lines 2.9. That's the education piece. And then 2.10. These were sort of fiscal policy requirements that the agency included in the original bill. that were originally processed, originally created legislatively out of both the Education Committee and the Transportation Committee. In the case of the education, it was a requirement on No Child Left Behind. On the transportation provision, it was a prohibition on the Department of Management and Budget from including in the governor's budget expenditures related to the Trunk Highway Fund for non-highway purposes. So the original bill removed those, the base bill that you have, removed those prohibitions, and Mr. Marks and myself felt that if that was and we're not speaking to whether we think that that's a good idea or not, but more that it should be something that's reviewed by the Transportation Committee rather than dealt in an overall finance package.
Senator Dibble, did you have a question to the A6 amendment from earlier?
Well, I'm grateful that those three pillars were removed because there is some very strongly held opinions on that subject, and I'm surprised that that was those items were even included in this bill without any notice to the Transportation Committee at all. This is the subject of some very, very serious conversation in the past. We need some due consideration on the Transportation Committee, so thanks for the catch.
Senator Bono?
Mr. Chair, I have a couple questions. Mr. Nauman, on line 16.20, when we talk about transferring money, wouldn't that be something we would normally review in the fiscal? I mean, it does not have fiscal impact, and wouldn't just that alone?
Mr. Nauman?
Send it here.
Ms. Weber?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michelle Weber. I'm the Director of Budget Operations at Minnesota Management Budget. And the changes in Section 5 of the bill are a result of the Office of Legislative Auditor fiscal note review study that they conducted last year. They are clarifying that the money is transferred from the Department of Revenue to Minnesota Management and Budget and to the Department of Education rather than billed by those agencies. So they're really, it's not changing the dollar amount. The dollar amount, if you see on line 16.21, the dollar amount is stricken. So it's just a restatement of the actual process of the revenue transfers those dollars at the beginning of the year to management and budget and to the Department of Education rather than management and budget and education billing the Department of Revenue. So it's a mechanical correction.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff, just one question. Will your next question be related to the amendment? Because I'd like to get the amendment adopted, if that's okay.
Yes, the next question is related to the amendment.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nauman, what is the provision on No Child Left Behind that would better be viewed in
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, this was, I think, about Mr. Bodden's pointing out line 2R has the repealers. I was going to give you the history, probably more than you wanted, but you can see that the section that's repealed or the subdivision that's repealed is on page 2R in the back of the repealers in the actual bill. So you can see that it's a requirement that if the Department of Education, and this relates to the overall section, does not transmit to the Commissioner of Education its approval of the conditions in sub 2, which relates to a certification of waivers under No Child Left Behind. Essentially, it's a measurement of, as I recall the provision, the Department of Education, the Department of Management and Budget work together to establish the overall costs of No Child Left Behind to the state and the extent to which federal funds will be held back if we're not in compliance. Is my recollection. It was a highly similar to what Senator Dibble spoke to about the transportation provision. It was a highly discussed item at the time that it was passed, probably in the 2004-2005 time frame, and our thought was that it made more sense to be considered in education.
A follow-up, Senator Bruno.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My final question is with regard to posting the local impact note. So does the effect of this amendment in any way narrow or change the use of asking for local impact notes?
Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chair, and Senator Bonoff, no, it does not.
Thank you.
Senator Engelbrechtson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your indulgence here. Senator Dibble brought up a point that was a little bit certainly not troubling, but it should be discussed a little further. He had made a comment that he appreciated the fact that we were cleaning some of these revisers up here, and it was a big issue with him. Is it something that maybe Senator Dibble can answer this? Is it something that you wanted to bring back to committee, or you had talked about, or
Senator Dibble?
I'm glad you asked, Senator Ingebrigtsen. This is the first time hearing about it. I am extremely pleased that council caught it. I am alarmed that it was even in this bill at all without any notice to the Transportation Committee or myself. I want to find out who proposed to slip this into this bill without any discussion with the appropriate leadership or committees. I'm very concerned about the fact that this repealer was in this bill.
Senator Engelbrechtsen?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator, and I have absolutely no clue what it is, but with your questions, I'm wondering if I'm comfortable passing at least this portion of it, if you need to hear it back in your committee, can you clarify? Maybe somebody can tell me what this is.
Then well, Senator Dibble?
Senator Engelbrechtsen, this repealer is being taken out, so I'm happy I'm comfortable, at least with this piece of it. So this piece of legislation will remain in law, which is a good thing. What it is, Senator Engelbrechtsen, is a prohibition against including expenditures from the Trunk Highway Fund in a budget submittal for non-highway purposes. So that prohibition remains in place. This repealer is being removed, so we're in a good position. I don't anticipate that this law is going to be repealed, at least not on my watch. But if the administration wants to come in and make an argument for that, we'll absolutely hear it in the committee. But they're going to need to bring a bill forward and propose to do that. I'm not going to hear it. For the time being, I'm comfortable with the law as it is.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, my question was similar, and I'm not sure if Senator Scalzi or maybe it's Mr. Nauman, where these changes came from. Do you know right offhand? Or?
Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, the changes that you see were introduced as part of the original bill, which I believe came forth from a review at the Department of Management and Budget of statutes that they thought could be streamlined and clarified. I don't think there was any ill intent by it, although we did think that it should be reviewed by the Finance Committee, and that's when Mr. Marks and I got involved when the bill was reported from state and local directly to the floor, because we saw some Finance Committee jurisdiction here.
Mr. Chair, the original bill, came from the Department of Management and Budget.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, that's my understanding.
So, Ms. Weber, perhaps you can shed some light on this issue.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. What we did at Minnesota Management and Budget was we conducted an assessment of all of the reporting requirements that we currently had, and we're looking to create efficiencies and not duplicate reports or reports that had become outdated. There was an error in the way that this particular provision about the trunk highway funds was included in the initial legislation. When Mr. Marks and Mr. Nauman talked with us about it, we did talk about the possibility of just eliminating there is a specific report requirement where MMB has to submit a report for any appropriations that are not constitutional or deemed inappropriate for trunk highway use, and that does not occur typically, so it's a report that we don't typically have to submit. So the intention was, the way we looked at it was, we don't typically have to produce this report because that does not occur. The legislature doesn't appropriate funds in an unconstitutional manner, and rather than eliminate the entire provision, because the provision was broader than just the report, we did consider just taking out the reporting requirement, but then recognize that it would be important to talk with the Transportation Committee about this. So we are in full agreement of removing this provision from the bill.
Thank you. Senator Dibble.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, as it happens, there are frequently efforts to appropriate dollars out of the Trunk Highway Fund that are of questionable propriety. So maybe we should actually be getting that report when those budget proposals come forward. We've already had to deal with a couple this year.
Any other questions of the testifiers on the A6 amendment? Senator Dibble renews his motion for us to adopt the A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. The A6 amendment is adopted. Any other questions on Senate File 1245 that is before the committee? Mr. Bonner wants to explain something for us here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Senator Saxog was about to ask me about this as well. I gave an answer earlier relating to the changes that deal with Minute and what's in the state government bill. I had an opportunity to confer with counsel for that committee. If you take a look at the bill, you'll see at the very end of the bill on page 17, there's a revisor's instruction. And this is the essence of what is being accomplished in this bill with regard to Minute. And the same section is included in the state government bill. Basically, it just tells the revisor to change the name provided for the Office of Enterprise Technology. There are about six other sections in the bill before you that are not included in the state government bill. They do some very similar things, but they're slightly different, and I can walk the committee through them if you want to take the time to do that now. I'll begin with Section 9, and you'll find that on page 6. And this is just basically including Minute, the new Minute, in the designation as an agency, formal designation as an agency under Chapter 15, as I understand it. Then the next page, and that would not be taken care of through a revisor's instruction, but I believe is something else that Minute wants to accomplish here. Then the next section, Section 19, on page 10. Again, this is not something that would simply be accomplished by renaming, but is intended to make it clear that the Chief Information Officer serves in the same capacity as a commissioner for the purposes of state law. And it's just a kind of a change in title there. The section that immediately follows that, Section 20, contains some additional information. This, I believe, relates to more of the authority provided to the office and a reporting requirement. I'm just taking a glance at it. It's on. You can see the stricken language on page 11, lines 6 through 11. This requires the office to review agency technology plans and provide a report regarding assistance given to those agencies. I think this may be obsolete given the office's more direct role in preparing these plans with the changes that were made recently. But we should get the, I think that's the agency's agreeing with that.
Mr. Chair, question on that provision?
Yes. Senator Bonner.
It makes sense to me, the first part of it, but would this provision then eliminate the commissioner coming before the legislative committees and divisions with jurisdiction to let them know the technology plans?
Mr. Bonner?
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking for other reporting requirements within 1604 sub 2. I think it'd probably be best to hear from the agency folks who worked on this. If anyone else can comment on it, that would be helpful.
Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I should clarify, I am not with Minute Services. However, we did work collaboratively with Minute Services on the incorporation of these, the MMB and the Minute provisions in the bill. It's my understanding that now with IT consolidation, they have developed a comprehensive statewide plan, so they no longer need individual agency plans to be developed. I cannot specifically answer the question about does that change the reporting requirement to the legislature.
A follow-up, Senator Bonoff?
Mr. Chair, and perhaps Senator Saxhog would know, is there some other way then that your committee would get this information that would be essentially the roll-up of all the agencies' plan under one? I can understand, again, why you would change the structure, but I would just wondering if there is then some other place where you, Senator Saxhog, would get that information.
Senator Saxhog?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, you know, I really don't know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxhoff, is that
Senator
a concern
Bonham.
For you?
Senator Saxhoff.
You know, I'm I don't know if it is or not right now. I mean, it might be something, though, that as long as we're working on the bill in conference committee, that we might look at that.
Any other questions? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Mr. Bonham mentioned that the commissioner, the chief information officer now is becoming a commissioner. how does the pay structure differ in between a chief information officer and a commissioner?
Senator Anderson, okay. Mr. Bonham?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I don't think this would affect the compensation allowed in law for the chief information officer. There's a separate listing of commissioners who are authorized, and I forget the exact percentage. I think it's 85%, maybe something slightly higher than that, a percentage of the governor's salary. I think that's already provided to the chief information officer. So the change in title, or clarifying that the chief information officer title carries the same authority as a commissioner, would not affect compensation provided to the chief information officer.
Senator Anderson, a follow-up?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bodden, on page 12, it lists on the top of on 12.4, exempt from Section 16C.03, Subdivision 17. It looks like it's new language that's been added. What's the exemption, if I may ask?
Mr. Bonner?
Mr. Chairman and members, and I had looked that up. It's, I believe it's authority for contract extensions, and it's a little confusing, perhaps, the exemption, or the section itself, allows the extension of the term of a contract for up to 10 years, and then this provides an exemption from that authorization. I'm not entirely clear whether that's intended to mean Minute could extend a contract as long as it would like, or whether it has no authority to provide any contract extensions. Taking a look at it here, that's not completely clear what's intended.
Mr. Chair, is there anybody from the
Senator Anderson, is there anyone else who might be able to shed some light on this line of questioning?
Mr. Senator Chair, Stasi? We did have another testifier who is not here right now. I apologize for that. Ms. Weber has been working with Minute on these provisions and is our best testifier at this point.
So, Senator Anderson, would you be okay with Senator Scalzi talking to the necessary person to get that information back to you?
Well, you know, I guess it's kind of a little bit disconcerting to see this new language being added into the bill that wasn't in our other bill, and now we're seeing this here. So I'll wait, and hopefully there'll be some.
Senator Goodwin.
I just would like to ask, thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, where's the language he's referring to?
On page
12.
On page 12, 12.4.
Okay.
Senator Goodwin.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it looks like, at least for part of 16C, you know, is the chapter that regulates contracting practice. So I don't know what system they're talking about. What system... do they mean?
Senator Scalzi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This provision was in the state government finance, so it was in the bill when the state government finance committee saw the bill.
And Senator Goodwin?
Mr. Chair, I just would like to find out what system it means. If it means the whole system of IT, it's pretty. It's not a good thing to put in there, because what that would mean then is that there are no rules for contracts, and at least under Subdivision 17. So maybe Mr. Bonner could tell me what Subdivision 17 is in 16C.
Mr. Bonner?
So, Mr. Chairman and members, again, 16C.03 sub 17 provides general authority to extend the term of a contract for up to a term of 10 years if there's a determination that the contractor will incur upfront costs under the contract that cannot be recovered within a two-year period, and that will provide cost savings to the state. and that those costs will be amortized over the life of the contract. So there are some conditions attached and an allowance for an extension up to 10 years. And again, what's being done here is to make it clear that the system administered by Minute would be exempt from that requirement.
So, Mr.
Senator Goodwin,
Chair, does that then mean that they can go longer than 10 years or that they would have to stick to the normal five-year limitation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, that's where I'm not certain what their intent is.
Maybe, Mr. Chair, I could, I'd like to offer an oral amendment to delete that language until we can figure out what exactly they mean by that, because it's a pretty significant issue.
Senator Goodwin, I think we might have someone from Minute who would be able to answer that question. Will you identify yourself for the record and welcome to the committee?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is John Eichten. I'm Legislative Director for the Office of Enterprise Technology. I apologize. I had some scheduling difficulties here. The exemption language, what it relates to is, excuse me, I ran over from another meeting. What it relates to is contracts that Minute enters into for long-term telecommunications infrastructure projects. So these are fiber projects, partnerships that, excuse me, that the state enters into with telecommunications companies around the state, private partners, in order to get the fiber laid for the state broadband and network infrastructure. So these contracts are typically 15, 20 years in length. We have had these exemptions, for several years, and it allows us to enter into these contracts and be able to have public-private partnerships for network infrastructure. So this would allow us to continue current successful practice. The Department of Administration is supportive. They've honored these longer-term contracts over the years, and this will simply allow us to continue that practice.
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, that's my concern. I mean, the Department of Administration has done these allowances without having it in state law, and that is not legal for them to allow you to extend the contracts when it's not currently in state law. So
we, excuse me.
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, we have had all of the other exemptions up until this time. It's simply that when 16C.03 subdivision 17 was put into statute, the reference was not carried into the Minute statute. So from our perspective, it's more of a technical change than anything else.
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, I would disagree with that. It's a technical change. I don't think it is, because you're saying now that you give automatically contracts for 15 to 20 years without having to renew a contract or look for another vendor. And, you know, I don't know that part of your business well enough to know if you can't possibly put that out for another bid or whatever and see if there's somebody else that wants to do it. But I know that happens too often, that these contracts are extended way beyond the limitations and statutes. So I do have a concern with that, and I would like to have a much better explanation than what I have right now for that particular piece. So I would ask, Mr. Chair, that we do delete that piece until we have more understanding of exactly what's happening in this particular technology field, that they can't rebid the contract after certain, at least 10 years, unless there's no other, unless they have to absolutely do it. But I hear that so much from agencies. We absolutely have to have these contractors for 15 or 20 or lifetime or whatever, when indeed they're just contracts that don't ever go out for bid again.
Mr. Eichten?
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, it's not that we want to hold on to a contractor for an extended period of time. It's just the nature of these contracts as partnerships between perhaps Verizon or a telecom provider, where we need to get fiber laid underground, buried, and the fiber will be used for 20, 25 years. And it's the nature of these sort of infrastructure projects that we need a longer-term commitment, and that's why the exemptions have always been put into place. As I said, it's simply that when an extension provision was put into 16C, at exemption language reference was not carried over. So I'd be happy to provide, go back to our telecom group, gather any information that the committee would like to see. But this has been successful practice for us, and we'd like to continue it.
So. Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, if Senator Goodwin's, I'm not sure she's done, actually.
No, thank you, Ms.
Senator Goodwin, I'm Peterson. Sorry.
Yes, I just, then it seems to me that you would have put this in statute rather than taken it out of statute, that you would put in that you had a, you said the problem is that you, your ability to contract for the 10-year period is not in your particular statute for technology,
Mr.
information
Chair, Senator
technology.
Goodwin, our reference to this extension was not put into our statute, this 16C.03 subdivision 17. But the other provisions that provide a limitation on contracts, we have been previously exempt from. You'll see 16C.05 subdivision 2, paragraph B, 16C.08 subdivision 3, clause 5, 16C.09.
Senator Goodwin?
Other questions?
Thank you to the
Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I was in front of Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding. Oh. No, Mr. Chair, the question I had relates back to page 11 in the elimination of the reports. Now that we have somebody from NIT here, and based on the
Mr. Chair, we're in the middle of my amendment.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought your question was to her amendment. Is your question
to her amendment? Yes.
Yes. Mr. Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, am concerned, as Senator Goodwin is, only because her and I had talked about contracts and working on something that she ever concerned earlier, maybe even a month ago. And it just seems like instead of maybe what's going on here is that there's some confusion as to what's happening with regards to this particular part of the bill. Maybe I would suggest it seems like we could certainly work that they could work this out between her and the author and bring it back maybe or instead of eliminating this section of the bill. It seems like it might be quite important, but it doesn't seem like everybody's quite communicating there. So I, for whatever reason, it seems like Senator Scalzi and you could get together and do that and bring it back. I mean, that would be – we discussed it certainly enough, so we could do that.
Yeah.
Would be a suggestion.
It is my understanding that this could also be worked out in a conference committee. So if Senator Goodwin's amendment is an adopted oral amendment to delete the new language on 12.4, there's still an opportunity for the parties to get together and work it out.
Mr. Chairman, just a clarification on Senator Goodwin's amendment. I think the proper way to take care of that is simply to move to delete Section 21.
Okay. But I think I have another question on the oral amendment from Senator Fischbach.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's actually a little bit on Senator's point. Maybe this is something we should either send back to state and local, because I feel like there's a lot of questions, still a lot of things that are going on with it. Or lay it on the table here. And you know, I noticed, too, I was looking through everything, we don't have a summary of this bill either, and that might help, too. You know, when you look at repeal this or that, sometimes having the summary alongside it with an explanation helps you understand it a little better. But I think this is maybe a work in progress, either sending it back to state and local or laying it on the table for the time being. I'm not making the motion, but I am suggesting to the chair that we potentially discuss that. that there is an amendment on the floor, but I thought that might be something they want to discuss or wait and figure anything out that's going on.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps we should lay this bill on the table for a day so that we could maybe get back to the issue that Senator Goodwin raises and we could work with Mr. Eichten to determine if that would be the appropriate amendment or if there's another way to do this.
Okay. Senator Sachsau.
Mr. Chair, and I'm not going to make a motion either, but another way we could do this is that we could accept the name change and the revises and instructions, but delete everything else. I think Mr. Bodern, and then we could take it up in a conference committee.
Senator Fitzbach.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest that we actually do our work here, and then we deal, you know, conference committees, a different kind of bird. So I would suggest, Mr. Chair, we do our work here, and if Senator Scalzi is suggesting that we lay her bill on the table, I understand there's an amendment, but when it's an appropriate time to make the motion to lay it on the table.
So, Senator Goodwin, do you want to go forth with your amendment or withdraw your amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would withdraw my amendment.
And is there a motion to lay the bill on the table by Senator Fischbach? Motion is to lay it on the table. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Senate file 1245 is laid on the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Members, there was a presentation that was done before some of you got here, which was Senator Herr's bill, which is Senate File 886. I would like to bring him back up before we go,
Mr. Chair.
To. Yes.
Sorry. Could we do my bill? My testifier is still here, and she's hanging on by her fingernail. She's got to leave in like 3 minutes.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would just move Senate File 886, Senator Herr's bill, and then we
can
get it.
Oh, I see Senator Herr's here. I thought we had to go get
it. So we have to adopt the division report first?
I move to adopt the division report, Senate File 886.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Senate File 886 is before us.
And I would move Senate File 886 be passed and sent to the floor.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
Senate File 886 passes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very
Senator
much.
Dibble. This is the Buyer's Board. Before us is 1011.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate your indulgence. Mr. Chair, I do have a division report to move.
Senator Dibble moves adoption of the committee report. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The division report has been adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1011 seeks to secure a reliable source of funding for what are known as the CERTS teams, the Community Energy Resource Teams, which are community-based organizations that work with individuals and businesses and utilities and all kinds of and the public sector as well across the state that was created by the legislature a number of years ago in Chapter 216C.385. Most members are very familiar with CERTS and the CERTS teams and what they do around energy efficiency and renewable and clean sources of energy, consulting with small and large organizations and helping utilities fulfill their programs.
Senator Dibble, Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm. Senator Bono.
We don't have it before us unless, is it a House file number?
Senate File 1011, it should be in your packets.
Senate File 1011.
I don't have it.
I don't
have it. Fiscal note on top.
I found it.
It was in my packet.
It's a one.
That side of the table got it. You guys just have to trust me.
Found it. It's the paper. Yeah. Apologize. Got
right.
It.
Great. Thanks.
Senator Dibble.
Oh, so very, very quickly, what this funding source is to designate or earmark an assessment that already exists against utilities. This is a $3.6 million annual assessment that is a part of the conservation and efficiency bill that we passed a number of years ago. The bulk of those dollars are used for demonstrations and applied research around conservation and efficiency. $500,000 that already is kind of designated or earmarked that goes to the University of Minnesota for energy efficiency code research, building standards and the like, used in conjunction with the Department of Commerce. And this would designate a different $500,000 per year for supporting the CERTS partnerships, very much in keeping with the purposes and intent of the assessment that already exists. So it's not a new assessment. It's designating a portion of that existing assessment. It's not general fund dollars, of course. It's rate payer dollars, utility dollars. With that, we have the CERTS ladies, Diana McEwen and Alyssa Polish, who can share a little bit more information if the committee so desires.
Any additional information? required. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, all your testifiers, is this asking for a $100,000 grant now to be assessed on an annual, I mean, on a biennial basis, or I'm not quite sure what you're deleting Shell Annley and then each fiscal year. Does that mean on a biennial basis that you're asking this money to come forward?
Senator Dibble, or you testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just it's annual. It's just stating annually in a different way. So it would be $500,000 per year. So, or if you want to think in biennial cycles, $1 million over the biennium.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So each year then, right now, the CERTS team has to come or apply for a grant. This way you're automatically saying they automatically get they don't have to ask for the grant. It's just going to be automatic that they get it.
Senator Dibble.
No, Mr. Chair. In the past, the CERTS team has had an annual designation of $500,000, although it was from the Renewable Development Fund, also ratepayer money. However, we had the big Renewable Development Fund reform last year. They were given a one-time allocation, kind of their last one, to keep them on their course until we could develop a more sustained source of funding for them, like they had had previous to last year.
Senator Anderson.
So this isn't new per se. They haven't had to come forward and ask for, a grant, because they had been getting this regular allocation from the Renewable Development Fund, but we decided to kind of clear the decks on the RDF, if you remember that whole effort from last year. And the Senate was led by Senator Rosen. So we're just kind of trying to establish a more reliable, sustained source of funding for them, but from a new source.
Senator Anderson, follow-up? Or any other committee members? Any follow-up? Any questions of the testifiers? So no. Well, there is an amendment, which appears to be an A1 amendment.
That was already incorporated. I don't know why it was in your packet. That was incorporated in the division report.
All right. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate File 1011 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
All those in favor? No, it's not amended.
Oh, okay.
Along with the division report. All those in favor say aye.
All right.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
No.
It passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
You were brilliant.
Thank you.
All right. What's that? We're going to go to House File 819, Senate File 613. So the bill is before us. Senator Scalzi, it appears that we're going to work off the House file just so that everyone knows.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, we are working off the House File 819 because the House has already passed this bill. This is a bill related to the Public Facilities Authority, known as the PFA. It's a multi-agency. As you know, it's a multi-agency financing authority that helps finance infrastructure programs for mainly smaller communities that don't have the resources to replace their failing stormwater and wastewater systems. So there's some assistance to local governments with this. And I have with me here today Jeff Freeman, who is the executive director of the PFA. And we also have an amendment to House File A-19. So I would ask Mr. Freeman to explain that amendment to you.
All right. Mr. Freeman, welcome to the committee. And please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Jeff Freeman, Director of the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority. This bill makes some technical modifications to PFA funding programs, primarily focusing on the programs that we have that are funded through the Clean Water Legacy Fund. There's no appropriation of funds with this bill, but it does make the programs, it will make the programs work a little better.
Mr. Freeman, just so I can make sure that everyone has the amendment, does everyone have the amendment? It is the 536 amendment.
Let's draft this.
Let's make sure. It's right behind the House files, just so that you know, and I thought I would stop because I know that he's going to testify to the amendment and what the amendment does.
Right underneath you. So, okay, let me do the amendment. Yes.
Everyone has it? Okay, thank you, Mr. Freeman. You can continue, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, the amendment makes one small additional change to the small community program, something that was an oversight when we had put the bill together and just discovered it late last week. It changes the small community program is for very small unsewered communities, provides both for construction, provides both a loan and a grant. The bill makes some changes to the grant provisions to make it more like our WIF program, which is based on affordability criteria. This amendment modifies the loan side, specifically the term of the loan, which is needed to fit with the grant change that we're making. So what it does is basically says all of these loans will be a maximum of 20 years, but not to exceed the design life of the system that's being built.
Any questions? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
No questions, Mr. Chair, but I certainly would move the amendment.
All right. All those in favor of adoption of the amendments? Mr. Bonner.
Just want to clarify for members in case there's confusion. If you look at the amendment, it refers to Senate File 613, and I've taken a look at it, and because the bills are identical, it will work as an amendment to House File 819. So whoever's moving it might want to incorporate the instruction that it is to amend House File 819.
We do that, yes.
All right. And will that be incorporated in your amendment, Mr.
Senator? Certainly would, Mr. Ingersons? Chair, yes.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, to the amendment, it says on page 4, line 34, delete 9 and insert 10. And I'm just wondering if that was a typo or if there's a concern there on section 10 of the Minnesota statute that we're repealing, that someone could explain what that.
Mr.
Chairman, so because the amendment adds a section and also includes the instructions to renumber the sections, the instruction on page 1, line 18 of the amendment picks up the reference to what would be the new section 10 in the bill, which would be the repealer, and makes it work.
And Senator Ingebrigtsen will incorporate those two amendments, into the 536. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. The amendment is adopted. To the bill, any additional questions? I will entertain a motion.
So moved.
Senator Stump moves it this be recommended to pass and to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
As amended.
Aye.
As amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
No.
Bill passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Carlson, Senate File 1629 is before the body.
Okay, here we go.
Senator Carlson, to Senate File 1629.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and committee, Senate File 1629 is an appropriations bill arising from the Joint House-Senate Subcommittee on Claims. This joint committee addresses claims arising from the Department of Corrections where no other option is available for a payer. The claims reflect those similar claims that you would find on the outside in that they include compensation for loss of property, costs for medical treatment, reimbursement for out-of-pocket medical treatment, pain, suffering, and lost wages. Due to the incarceration circumstances of claimants, costs for intangibles such as lost wages and pain and suffering are routinely denied. The payments to medical providers are made at the rates used for medical assistance. Payments for permanent injuries, since they occur in the course of work for the state under the Department of Corrections, are paid according to the workers' compensation schedules. Any revenue that is paid out on in this the situation is subject to recapture in the cases of non-payment of child support, any other things that are owed to the state. Claims under $500 are generally addressed by the department. 15 of these claims totaling $3,701.60 were allowed under this authority. 54 additional claims were considered by the committee. Four of these claims totaling $17,049.05 were allowed. One claim was laid over pending additional medical information, and the total appropriation for this bill is, for all 19 claims allowed, is $20,750.65, which is the lowest level of claims for many years. If you have any questions, I have Ms. Michelle Timmons, the counsel for the committee, that can answer any questions.
Any questions on Senate File 1629? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator or Ms. Timmons, you've got itemized five different claims. Is there any of those funds that are itemized for general damages or pain and suffering?
Senator Carlson?
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, no. We do not. We generally just flat-out deny anything for pain and suffering or for lost wages.
Senator Newman, any follow-up? Nope. Senator Engelbrightson, did I see your hand up?
No.
Okay. Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson. I previously served on that committee when it was chaired by Senator Jungbauer. And I remember there's also non-correction type of claims. Was curious, were there any submitted regarding potholes?
Senator Carlson.
Damage to vehicles.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wieger, we did not see any of those this year. There are some that are submitted to the department, to MnDOT, and they are generally handled within MnDOT.
Ms. Timmons?
Mr. Chairman.
Identify yourself for the record, please.
Members, I'm Michelle Timmons, the reviser of statutes, and serve as the Claims Committee counsel. Senator Wieger, there was actually one pothole claim this year, but it was settled by the parties before the Claims Committee meeting and actually paid out by the Department of Risk Management through the Department of Administration on behalf of MnDOT. And so there was one, but there was no need to hear it because it was resolved prior to the Claims Committee meeting.
Any other questions? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm grateful that did not come to the Transportation Committee. But, Mr. Chair,
Senator Dibble.
Question for Senator Carlson. I might have missed it in his presentation. It looks like at least three of these folks are employees of the state. And why is it that this is the avenue they have to pursue for reimbursement rather than normal channels, health care, workers' comp, et cetera?
Senator Carlson?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I guess I'll let Ms. Timmons answer.
Ms. Timmons?
She's going to answer.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble. These are not employees of the state. These are actually persons who are incarcerated or were incarcerated. With Terrence Dumont, Kent Richard Jones, and Mary Jo Muck. They were all incarcerated at the time of their injuries. So the statute says the Subcommittee on Claims is the exclusive remedy for these types of permanent personal injuries, but they are paid by analogy to the workers' compensation schedules. And then Ms. McCoy is a little bit different. She was someone on sentence to service in Washington County when she was injured. And so
I see.
We were simply reimbursing the medical providers at the medical assistance rates in that case.
Thank you.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, you know, I hate to get into the details of exactly the what happened because that's not really our purview. But, you know, when you look a little deeper, you wonder permanent injuries to the head, mm-hmm. how $1,500 does very much for somebody who's incurred permanent injuries to the head. So I wondered if you could share any light on that.
Senator Carlson, or would you like to testify?
Mr. Chair, I'll do an introductory comment. These are reimbursed at a rate of workers' comp. And what they do is they look at the percent of permanent injury, and then it's based on that number. And perhaps Ms. Timmons can expand on that.
Ms. Timmons?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff. In that particular case, that Terrence Dumont case, the individual had suffered traumatic brain injury prior to becoming incarcerated. And as a result of that, he suffered a lot of problems with his gait, speech impediments. Then happened is during incarceration, he actually volunteered to split logs for a sweat lodge that was being built for a ceremony, a Native American ceremony, and the individual has Native American heritage and wanted to participate. And while he was splitting the log, a metal splitting wedge flew back and hit him at the side of the head and caused a laceration, which did heal. But the individual suffered continuing headaches as a result of that. So it's when someone has a prior existing injury, it's always tricky to attribute how much of the injury is due to the work-related injury. But in this case, because the new symptoms were the ongoing headaches, there was a 2% permanent partial disability rating, and that resulted in the $1,500. So that's why it was so low in that case.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Carlson or Ms. Timmons, were any of the claimants that came before your committee veterans?
Ms. Timmons.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that. I don't believe that we had any information in the record as to their veteran status.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a couple of questions. When you talk about permanent injuries, so maybe Ms. Timmons can answer this. So they're basically writing off on this. There's going to be no other claims against the state of Minnesota once they accept this and write off on these claims. And my other question is, how does this compare to the numbers with county sentenced to serve? Do you know or have any idea how much the counties pay out to these for these types of claims versus state?
Ms. Timmons?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen. As to the first question, typically what the Department of Corrections does is ask the claimant to sign a release before they receive the money. So what we do is the appropriation bill appropriates the money, it goes to the Department of Corrections, and then they do the appropriate releases before the money is actually remitted to the claimant. Typically, the subcommittee pays for permanent partial injuries. That's what three of these claims are, Dumont, Richard Jones, and Mary Jo Muck. Sometimes, occasionally, there is wage loss, though typically not for wages that would be incurred in a prison program, for example. Those are routinely denied. So that's what this is for. And then can you refresh my recollection as your second question?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for follow-up. How does this compare with all the other county STS programs? Do you know?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Again, injuries on STS programs are actually, there is actually payment by the state. There is a statute, and the idea was to incentivize the counties to use sentence-to-service programs, which at the time many counties were not doing because of potential liability. So the state actually takes on that liability, and that's why there were 15 sentence-to-service claims involved in that $3,700 a figure, and then Ms. McCoy was actually on sentence to service.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Wieger.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 1629 be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. Senate File 1629 passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I believe that's it. We'll be back tomorrow at 8:30 sharp. Sharp. Without, yes, Senator Anderson.
You mean sharp? Does that mean 9 o'clock?
That's sharp.
Sharp is 8:30. 8:25 is the preference. Let me say. Then you have 5 minutes to get coffee.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, maybe Senator Cohn could comment on
you took the words right out of my mouth. Sorry.
I knew you were going there. That's why.
We'd like to know.
What would we like to
know? Mr. Chair, we'd like to hear from Mr. Chair.
What? Well, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
8:30 sharp is Senate time.
Senator Fischbach. All is well. If there are no other questions, the meeting is adjourned. See you tomorrow, 8:25.